Kevin O'Connor Show is coming up next. Welcome back to another episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show. Today, I'm bringing on my old teammate, my good friend, Tate Frazier from One Shining Podcast. And we're going to talk about college basketball today. It's time to do an NBA draft primer because we're entering a pretty interesting time of the year in the college basketball schedule with the Maui Invitational happening. A lot of big matchups coming this week and in the weeks to come between prospects that you're going to know. So I'm having a conversation with Tate talking about what we've seen so far with guys like Cooper Flagg, Ace Bailey, some newcomers popping up in the top 10, and a whole bunch else that's coming up after Father John Misty. Joining me today to talk about college basketball is my old friend, Tate Frazier from One Shining Podcast. What's going on, Tate?
It's great to see you, KOC. Long time no see, and there has been a lot of college basketball, a lot of basketball happening in general. It is great to be here, great to pick your brain, and great to be on the Kevin O'Connor Show. Look at you, man. You got your own namesake of a show. I'm proud of you. I love to see it. What growth.
It's exciting, Tate. It's been a fun year with Yahoo Sports so far. I miss working with you, doing the weekly shows over at FanDuel TV. Right. We had a lot of fun doing that last season. But here we are. Get to talk about college basketball because I think it's important, Tate. It's a big week in college basketball. You got the Maui Invitational, a lot of big matchups, and we've seen a lot so far this season. So it's a good time to catch up on what we've seen for NBA fans thinking about the draft. A lot of teams have stunk the start of the year. They're already playing on Tankathon. So let's start out with the potential number one pick from Duke, Cooper Flagg. So far this season, he's averaging 30.6 minutes, 17.8 points, 8.8 rebounds, 3.8 assists, 1.8 steals, 1.8 blocks, 2.8 turnovers. And all of those numbers, Tate, lead Duke. All of them lead Duke, including those turnovers and minutes. Cooper Flagg, so far this season, it's been a mixed bag. He had the turnovers at the end of a game earlier this season. He looked like a slippery floor. There's been some criticism of his shooting and the creation ability, but 17 years old. There's no denying the 26 points that he had against Kentucky, 24 points against Arizona, despite being a bit underdeveloped offensively. To me, he still clearly looks like the number one pick.
Yeah. Capture the flag, right? That's what everyone's saying. Everyone's trying to capture the flag, wave the white flag. I don't know what the actual terminology is, but Cooper Flagg is going to be the number one pick. In fact, he's going to be the number one pick in last year's draft. I've seen that already happening where people were saying if he was in last year's draft, he would have been the number one pick. So congratulations to Cooper Flagg. He will go down as the number one pick in 2024 and in 2025. So he has been able to get both of those reps. He's really good. And we must remember Cooper is just 17 years old. We're going to hear that throughout the entire season. And it works in both ways because when he does something great, like lead his teams in points, assists, rebounds, blocks, steals, you say, this kid is only 17 years old, KOC. But when Cooper Flagg does something like he did at the Kentucky game, which is choke, for lack of a better term, he's only 17 years old, so you can't say he choked. You know what I mean? So he's living the dream.
Like, hey, there's some animosity as a target.
No, I'm just saying, this is genius.
Sounds like.
This is genius for Cooper Flagg. Yeah, it's a double entendre.
Does it trigger you when I say slippery floor?
I'm just saying that Cooper Flagg has been able to work it both ways. He's 17 when he's great. He's 17 if things go bad. Regardless, he's the number one pick in back-to-back drafts. And he does have game. Let's be fair. He does have game. He is fun to watch. He does have a little bit of a intensity about him, like he carries himself in a way where he's got that kind of FU attitude, which is something that your former boss and my boss Bill Simmons, he likes the FU attitude of Cooper Flagg. I wish that he had some better matchups in college, just physically with his size, with what he's able to do. He's going to be able to dominate his matchup on most nights, but that's comes to the territory of being the town of a number one pick. But he is a lot of fun to watch, and the Arizona game was very encouraging. And this Duke team defensively, KOC, is elite. Probably one of the best teams that we've seen at Duke defensively. Jay Williams said since 2001. So that's high praise from Jay Will.
You mentioned Cooper Flagg in terms of it works to him. You're right. 17 years old, it can work to his advantage both ways. When he's struggling, Genius. He's only 17. When he's shining. Oh my God. And he's only 17. It's like the old thing. Tatum's only 19 years old, right?
It's genius. They did this before. It's from the same, from the creators that brought you Jason Tatum is only 19 years old. Comes Cooper Flagg is only 17. It's really good stuff, KOC.
Duke propaganda, right?
It works. It hits.
Well, you mentioned their defense. I think that's where Flagg defensively very much ahead of his offense so far this year. What have been your early impressions of Flagg on the defensive end?
Yeah, he's been great. Rim protection, on the ball. I mean, they're just defensively, the length of Duke is giving a lot of teams trouble. Arizona, they kept them out of transition. Arizona, Caleb Love especially likes to get buckets. He had one layup in transition. That was pretty much it in that entire game. So Duke's been able to limit transition. They've been able to lock down defensively. Cooper Flagg has been able, with Malowach out there, which we can talk about him a little bit too. I mean, Cayman Malowach, when he is at the five and Flagg is at the four, the rim protection of those two guys, I mean, it is really hard to get a shot around the rim that is easy to take and that you're going to finish because of those two guys. They're menaces as far as being able to protect the basket. And then, as far as like the big three of this team, I do feel like it is Con Knipple, Cooper Flagg, and Tyrese Proctor, right? Those are the big three guys at Duke. And then you had this Malowach kind of X factor when he's on the floor. If he's hitting threes especially, it's like, what do we even do with this Duke team? It's almost like Malowach, I would liken him to the Porzingis factor with the Celtics. It's like, if you get Malowach on the floor and he's not in foul trouble and he's making threes, watch out. There's nobody that can beat Duke. I mean, and that's kind of why their ceiling is so high this year.
Well, let's talk about Malowach then, because if you're thinking about those Duke prospects, Knipple, 6'7", 40% shooter from three, 90% from the line. I think there's no denying what his role, projected role would be in the NBA as a shooter who can handle a little bit as well. But Malowach, he is a very interesting guy because of that shooting ability. He's not just a 7'1" rim protector at rim finisher guy, but he shoots over 70% from the free throw line. He's got some tough, soft touch. He's one of two from three so far in the season. So if that shot is for real, suddenly I think he's a guy that pre-draft we could be talking about in the top three conversation, but he's going to need to prove himself against the Hunter Dickinson types. Duke faces Kansas on Wednesday. Those are the types of matchups where I think Malowach is going to have to shine for his stock to rise over the course of the season.
And see if he can battle with a true five, right? I mean, yes. He can, obviously he's got to, fill out a little bit in that frame, but can he actually bang with someone like Hunter Dickinson? And I do think Derek Queen at Maryland and Malowach are like the two bigs that you can watch that are freshmen this year, just to kind of see what is their potential? Because I think they both could get into that top 10. Who even knows, like you said, even top five conversation for someone like Malowach with the opportunity and the eyeballs that he's going to get. But Duke is really good. Knipple's really good. Flagg, he's not even going to sweep the rookie of the year in the ACC because Knipple won the first week. That's how good Knipple has been. And I almost feel like, general national conversation is obviously going to be about Flagg. But if you watch Duke play, the one that really kills you is Con Knipple. And I don't necessarily know if he's like a top 7 pick or whatever I've seen him projected as. But he's a hell of a basketball player. And I wish that he would come back to play at Duke next year, because that would be good for college basketball. But obviously the NBA comes calling when you're a Duke Blue Devil. So, he'll probably be out of there too. But those three freshmen are really, really fun watches for Duke.
I mean, Knipple's fun, dude. Like, it's like, not only is he just a shooter, but he can drive a bit. He can handle a little bit. He's a solid passer in the flow of the offense. I don't know if he's actually 6'7". As he's listed, maybe he's more like 6'5", 6'6". It's always hard to tell. I don't know if he's quite 6'7".
It's always 2 inches off. Yeah, Bronny was 6'4", right? I mean,
yeah, and
we
turns
know how
out
this
he's
goes.
5'10".
Well, I don't know, Kevin. I haven't seen the measurables, but I'm just saying, you know how these things work at schools. You can be anything, as long as you put your heart and mind to it. And maybe a little money under the table. That's how you make it work.
The thing is, though, nowadays, though, with the draft combine needing to go measure, we're going to find out how tall you really are. So,
eventually,
eventually we will find out. But Knipple's a nice player. I really like this Duke team. And Cooper Flagg, of course, he's the star of the team. He's always going to get the most attention. Now, with him as the number one pick, I have him still at number one on my board. I don't foresee that changing. However, when you're talking about number one pick, it is nice when that player can be a primary creator. can be the engine of your offense. Do you think Cooper Flagg long-term has those skills that he can develop, or is he more of one of the guys on your team who contributes towards winning in many other ways, but isn't going to become a primary engine? What path do you see him going, Tate?
I think he's going to be a franchise player. I think he's going to be your primary pillar on the team. That doesn't necessarily mean that Cooper Flagg is going to lead your team in scoring. It just means he's going to be the cog of your team that basically makes everything work around him. And obviously, when you look around the league and you look at matchmaker and you try to play matchmaker with the whole situation, Utah makes a lot of sense because of one, Danny Ainge being there. Two, it seems like they've tipped their hand a little bit as to their interest in him. And when you have Markkanen, you have a Filip Kowski, you have an open franchise for, you know, someone to kind of slot in there and be a franchise guy. That would make a lot of sense to me. But I do think that he can be a primary creator. I think he does like to have the basketball in his hand. But I also don't think that he has that same sort of that alpha dog mentality where he's like, I have to be the leading scorer any given night. You know what I mean? I think he likes creating for others and doesn't necessarily have to be that guy. So I think he's a franchise player. I think he will be the number one pick, but I also don't think that you have to go out there and expect this guy to get you buckets like he's Carmelo Anthony. He has a little bit of that in his game, but he's going to be more of a guy that does, you know, 5-5-5-5-5, 10-10-10-10-10 all the way down the stat sheet because he affects the game at a high level.
I think that's spot on, Tate. I agree with you. I mean, he might not be, you know, high pick and roll over and over guy, but he might be the guy who's running a dribble handoff, receiving the ball at the elbow, or he's the screener, catches the ball on the short roll, attacks the basket, kicks it out, or scores himself. Sometimes he will bring the ball up the floor himself. He can affect the game in so many different categories that those touches add up. He doesn't need to be your traditional creator. And I think about, you know, you mentioned Utah as a fit for him. If the Sixers season continues going sour and they win the lottery and end up with the number one pick, imagine Cooper Flagg paired with Tyrese Maxey and Jared McCain. Two perimeter guys, Maxey with his speed, McCain with his feel and his shooting ability. Plug Flagg in with those two guys, never mind whatever would happen with Joel Embiid at that point. That's the dream, is pairing him with guards like that who can be those guys who share the creation responsibility. Now, with that said, I think there's always a possibility that somebody sneaks up and maybe takes the number one spot. Maybe there's a team that ends up preferring somebody else. Are there any other guys this year among the top prospects? Ace Bailey from Rutgers is ranked 2 on a lot of people's boards. Dylan Harper, 6'6" guard, also at Rutgers, ranked 3rd or 2nd on a lot of people's boards. They're the two names that people mention the most. Do you think either of them have any chance to take that number one spot from Cooper Flagg?
Yeah, I think Ace Bailey and, you know, obviously his name being Ace helps with him being a potential number one pick. You know, it kind of feels like a hat on a hat.
It's a great
there.
Name.
You know, and a great name. And his real name is Air Bailey.
Air Bailey. Like, amazing.
Yeah.
If why does he go by Air? Air Bailey to me. I don't get it.
It's a way better name. And when he actually got announced for the McDonald's All-American game, I did that announcement and I called him Eric Bailey. And I had all these people coming after me in Georgia being like, it's Ace Bailey, you idiot. And I was like, well, you know, I saw Air. I went with Air. Sorry about that. So maybe he can go versatility, his B-ball reference. He can do Air or Ace. But regardless, he has the wingspan. He has the package of a superstar. He's the best shot maker in this class. If you watch an Ace Bailey game, the Ace Bailey experience is basically no, no, no. Oh my God, what a shot. You know what I mean? That is a lot of what Ace Bailey does. And I think you can take that one of two ways, which is like, wow, what an incredible shot maker. Or you can take it as, why is he having to take these really difficult shots? Mm-hmm. Which I think there's some coaches and scouts that probably would veer into that conversation. I do think he's very raw. I don't think he's a, you draft him, he can play tomorrow and actually help you win a game kind of guy. He's like, if you give me a 5-year runway and you say Washington Wizards, he's going to be our guy that we're going to invest our time in and he's going to turn into something. that he can be a superstar because he has all the makings of a superstar as far as hand size, shot creation, shot making ability, size, length, wingspan. All the, he checks all these boxes, right? He's also, I feel like, mentally going to evolve so much. You know what I mean? He's still like, if you talk to him, he's got kind of this childish almost joy to him where, you know, it's fun to talk to him, fun to hear him talk about basketball. He's going to mature into himself and into his game as a basketball player. So I think Ace Bailey, there's going to be some people at the top that maybe talk themselves into Ace Bailey as being the guy. Dylan Harper, if you watch him.
Bailey, 6'10". And he's, like you said, you described it perfectly. No, yes guy. Now,
tough shot maker.
I like Ace Bailey. I have him top five on my board. But the last game, Rutgers lost 17 points on 17 shots. He barely got into the paint at all. He was only 6 of 17 from the field. He has only one assist on the season. And in the closing moments of that game, with a chance to win the game, he brought the ball up the floor, stopped his dribble at half court with a second defender shading towards him, and then he made the worst pass. Just telegraphed it to a teammate. Clearly was going to be intercepted, and it was. And I watched that, and I'm like, okay, I can see why he doesn't pass the ball. And I don't love the feel. I don't love the ability to get into the paint. He seems like one of those guys who is listed at 6'10", but he plays more like he's 6'5". And that's where my hesitations are with Ace Bailey. And I know he dealt with a hip flexor injury in preseason. Maybe that's limiting him. Super young, as you said, he will mature. There's a love for the game. You expect him with his size and ability to get way better over time. That's why he's still top five in a good draft class on my board. But I have my concerns with him. Whereas like with Dylan Harper, 6'6" guard, averaging 20 points, five boards a game, almost as much as his taller teammate, and five assists as well. Better feel. He's the type of guy that I think with his passing ability, he manipulates defenders. He gets into the paint. He knows how to go downhill. High IQ player who's a strong driver. He's a good finisher, good creator, really good defender. To me, Dylan Harper feels like the safer bet. But Ace Bailey's that higher upside bet between those two Rutgers prospects. I just don't think either of them are going to surpass Cooper Flagg. I just don't.
No, I don't think so either. But I will say Dylan Harper is that guy. And when you watch him play, and the reason why there will be a conversation about these two is because Dylan Harper today is a better player. The idea of what Ace Bailey can become, the potential versus the production, right? I mean, it's kind of the conversation we always have with draft picks. You know what I mean? It's like, do I like the guy who's already producing, or do I like the guy who has the package to one day be a potential franchise star? And we don't have many of those. And Ace Bailey has those things. You mentioned the end of that game against Kennesaw State. Dylan Harper was right there asking for the basketball, and he had 21 points, 9 assists in this game. It's a tough road game at Kennesaw State. Kennesaw State is coached by former Alabama assistant coach who played at Alabama, and you know what I mean? He understands big games and, you know, is trapping these guys. So Ace Bailey, freshman mistake. Cooper Flagg, freshman mistake. You know what I mean? We've seen our potential two number one picks make freshman mistakes, and they will learn from those mistakes, and they will be better for those mistakes. So if you're an NBA person, and you're like, thank God they're making those mistakes not on my watch. You know what I mean? And I can see how they respond. Cooper Flagg, great response. Goes to Arizona, gets a win. Ace Bailey, we'll see what he does in his next game to see what that response looks like. And I think that will also inform, you know, these guys are both top five picks. I just don't think they're the number one pick because Cooper Flagg is going to be the number one pick.
For sure. And this is a big week for Rutgers as well. They have Notre Dame on Tuesday and then Alabama on Wednesday. Those games feel like they will be great litmus tests for them as prospects and Rutgers as a team.
He's not the number one pick. You mentioned Alabama, but LeBaron Filon is a name to watch for UKOC.
That's my sleeper, Tate. That's my sleeper.
Okay, I'm sorry. We'll tease it for later.
We'll talk about it right now after the break.
Okay, perfect.
All right, Tate, you mentioned LeBaron Filon out of Alabama. We were going to talk sleepers. We might as well just do it right now.
Let's do
it. I don't know if he counts as a sleeper as much anymore with his start to the season for Alabama. 13 points per game, 5 assists, 4 rebounds. He's 6'4", long arms, just a freshman. Filon looks awesome. So continue on with what you were saying about him,
Tate. you have to watch this Alabama team because they have three of the best guards in the country. Mark Sears was supposed to be the preseason player of the year, obviously led them last year to the Final Four. Verno, your old co-host, said he was Jalen Brunson reincarnated. He is a very fun player to watch, but they also have LeBaron Filon, the freshman from Mobile, Alabama. They also have Aiden Holloway, who transferred over from Auburn, and both of these guys have looked great. Two five-star guys, two guys who really know how to create their own shot, initiate for others. And Filon, the reason why it's something that's encouraging is because he plays at Purdue and he looked like their most seasoned guard. The next game that they go, they play top 25 Illinois. Illinois has a lot of NBA talent on their team as well, guys like Will Riley, and it plays a great game and is their best guard and has 9 assists. So like when Filon is playing high level competition, he gives you high level production, and that, you know, tends to trend well when we look at the NBA level. So, as much as we heard about Sears all offseason, myself included, I picked him to be the player of the year. Filon looks like the best guard on Alabama, and that's how deep they are.
I mean, Mark Sears, it's been a slow start to the year for him as a scorer. He's going to get back on track like he was last year, especially if he wants to be a first-round draft pick at his size, below 6 feet tall. I had him ranked as a first-rounder last year. I would not, based off of his production so far this year. He's got to be better. But Filon, he looks like a first-round pick at his size, and I love him driving the basket. He can decelerate. He's got body control. He can change pace and speeds. He finishes with his left hand or his right hand, so he's ambidextrous. And on those drives to the rim, he shows his passing ability, too. Like, he had a pass the other, last week where it looked like it was going to be a floater, but ended up being a lob. Like the Trae Young style thing where you don't know if it's a lob or a floater. He just looks like their most seasoned guard, as you said. And he's a teenager. He can pass. Yeah. He can kick it out. He's passing the interior. The perimeter scoring needs to develop over time, but I trust his touch. I feel like he does have touch on floaters. He's above 70% from the free throw line. I think long term, the shot will be figured out.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of his game, and Nate Oates is one of those coaches where Dan Hurley got the call from the NBA, obviously with the Lakers. I think Nate Oates is the next coach like on the docket of NBA coaches or NBA teams trying to find coaches for the future. Nate Oates is from Detroit, not putting anything out there because Detroit's playing some good basketball this year, but I do feel like eventually Nate Oates is going to get a call because he has an NBA rotation. Like in college, you want a 7-man rotation, NBA 9-man rotation, right? They got a 9-man rotation at Alabama, and they might have 11 guys who could all play at a high level in D1 basketball. That's the kind of talent with the transfer portal, with bringing in freshmen that are 5 stars. I mean, Nate Oates has got a machine going at Alabama right now.
I mean, and they're all threes and layups, too. They run a very analytically friendly
He's a math
NBA
teacher,
style.
KOC. Yeah. He knows math. Three is more than two.
Who are some other sleepers, Tate, that you have on your list?
One I wanted to point out that was at the Greenbrier tip-off, shout out the other night, great game there. We were playing in West Virginia, but we got Pitt taking on Wisconsin. And my guy Jalen Lowe, the point guard for Pittsburgh, I just feel like Jalen, you know, he's got the size, he's got the touch, he's got the feel. He's been able to read kind of defenses more, especially being able to figure out things out of the pick and roll. If you've watched him this year, had a triple-double. Cam Jones at Marquette had a triple-double. One of my favorite players in the country as well. Jalen Lowe is the other guy that had a triple double in college basketball. Not as easy to do in college basketball. John Morant famously did it in the NCAA tournament. Shout out to him. But Jalen Lowe is just basically on triple double watch every single night. 15-5-5 against Wisconsin in this game. Orchestrates everything. Can find shots for others. Can find shots for himself. And it's just silky smooth. Has great touch and playing with Capel. And we already saw last year Bub Carrington, one of my favorite players already as a rookie this year at Pittsburgh as their initiating point guard. Jalen Lowe has stepped right in as a sophomore. He learned from Bub last year, and he's a real fun watch. So I know a lot of people aren't tuning into Pittsburgh basketball, but if you do, Jalen Lowe is a fun guy to watch.
You mentioned Cam Jones and passing there, Tate. I'd say he made the right decision to return to college because he looks like a better version of himself for Marquette. He's definitely one of the best returning players that could improve their draft stock, averaging over 20 points, shooting 74% from two-point range, 44% from three, now averaging over 6 assists to only 1.7 turnovers as well. He's 6'5", 200 pounds. He's still more of a a score first guard. That's what you're getting Cam Jones for if you draft him. But I think he's showing a bit more playmaking feel this season. Is that one of the differences you've observed with Cam Jones for Marquette this year, now his senior season?
Right. Cam Jones last year played behind Tyler Kolek, Knicks backup point guard, and Kolek obviously orchestrated and ran the show. This year, Cam Jones is able to do that himself. He was more of a catch and shoot guy last year. This year, he's showing his passing ability, and we saw it last year, right? I mean, Kolek would go out of the game. Cam Jones would take over the ball handling duty, and he would make some incredible plays. But obviously, we were all talking about the All-American Tyler Kolek. So he does have the spotlight on him. He is one of the main characters in college basketball. He has been a lot of fun. They've had some great games at Maryland, right? I mean, Maryland, that was a chaotic crowd, a chaotic atmosphere. He was able to steady the ship, handle everything. He's been there before. He's got a nice kind of calmness about him, and smooth is fast, and he does everything very smoothly, and he has great vision on the floor as well, being able to find guys in the corners for threes, whatever it is. And guys like David Joplin on his team are able to have nights where they have 29 points because they got a guy like Cam Jones who's able to find them in their spot. So he hits people right in the back basket too. You know what I mean? These guys are catching it and they're right up, quick release, because Cam Jones can make high level passes and high level plays. And like you said, KOC, he's 6'5", so he has the measurables, probably has to put on a little bit of weight, but he looks like a guy who could make a difference at the next level.
I like him a lot. Another one that I like that returned to college is Colin Murray Boyles from South Carolina, 6'7", 245 pounds, long arms. Went back for sophomore season. He's averaging 16 points, 9.4 rebounds, 1.8 assists per game, averaging just a tick under 30 minutes per game in five games for South Carolina. I know over the years, there's been a lot of players that have been compared to Draymond Green. To me, he's the closest thing.
Defensively.
A whole lot of players and nobody's come close. To me, Colin Murray Boyles is the closest thing in terms of the defensive intensity, versatility on the perimeter, shot blocking ability, rebounding ability. And then if you also factor in the offense, I know he's got a negative assist to turnover ratio so far this season, but I like his passing feel. I like his ability to put the ball in the basket and drive and make passes off the bounce. Murray Boyles, to me, is one of those guys that you plug him into an NBA team. He can switch everything on defense, play different roles on defense, but offensively, even if the shot doesn't come along, which it seems like it's improving steadily, he can still offer a lot for your team. What do you think about Colin Murray Boyles?
I will say the Indiana game was a tough one. That was a tough watch, a pretty big stinker in that game. But I also think that McKenzie Mbako was looking at your draft board and was saying to himself, I should be a first round pick. And he went at his neck. So I do think that had, some impact there. I like his game defensively, like you said. I almost feel like it would have been better for him to go last year and already doing some of this stuff at the next level and growing his game at the next level.
Right. I know he committed to stay for a second year, but like I think he would have been a late first or early second. And there's a lot of players drafted in that range that are playing minutes now that are getting good developmental opportunities. I think it's a smart team would have drafted him. And by going back, yes, you could improve your draft stock, but you might, maybe not, maybe you don't. Maybe things stay the same and you just miss a whole year of NBA level development.
Also, you waited to go into a more talented draft pool, right? You know what I mean? That's really the issue. I mean, it's not even that he may be getting worse. He is getting better, obviously. Like you said, his shot is getting better, but he's now dealing with this great draft class with so much depth, and there's going to be a lot of teams that are trying to find talent late first round, early second round. So he might just be one of those guys that falls out of favor just because he isn't on a good team this year either, KOC. So, I mean, we might not be talking about him as we're watching games into March and into April. So that also hurts you when you get down to draft talk.
Another guy I want to talk about with you, Tate, is I don't know what category you could put him in. You could put him into a sleeper category. You could put him into is he a secret number one contender? Yegor Demin from BYU.
Right.
On the season, averaging 15 points, 7 assists, 4 rebounds, 2 steals, making 57% of his threes, 12 of 23, small sample, obviously. But he's a 6'8 point guard who spent the last 2 years out of Russia playing in Spain for Real Madrid, playing for their second team. It's early, but the passing ability that Yegor has, the finishing ability, the dunk he had against the end of the first half against UC Riverside, drove the lane, lefty dunk in traffic. I'm like, dude, this guy can finish. He's ambidextrous. His passing feel is amazing. And he's hitting his three so far off the dribble, off the catch. At his size, I'm just saying, maybe he ends up top two, top three. I don't think he'll be number one, but I wouldn't be totally shocked if this continues. And that's a big if. They got some tough teams coming up. They got Ole Miss on Thursday, top 25 team. Providence next week. And then in January, they have a test against Houston with their great defenses. But if Demon has more of these great performances passing these tests, to me, he feels like a guy that's going to be pretty clearly a top 5 to 10 guy.
Yeah, he's definitely lottery, right? I mean, I feel like it was all, when he was going into the season, it was like, yeah, Demon is a lock to be a lottery guy. Now it's crept in,
late
though.
Lottery,
he's a lock.
More late yeah, lottery type of guy.
Late lottery, like, right? Now it's like he's top five. Yeah, yeah, yes. Right. And that is, I think, one, the eyeballs that are happening at BYU in general because of the NBA influence that they have. I mean, mm-hmm. It is basically a shadow operation for Danny Ainge. Let's just be, you know, frank about what's happening, which I respect at the highest level. You know what I mean? Like, I see what's going on, and I think it's very smart. And I do think that the Utah Jazz, Will Hardy, everybody, like, they're keeping eyes on BYU, and they have lottery talent because it's not just Dimon that's there, right? Cannon Catchings is a very, very interesting player, and he's a really, really fun player to watch. And then you look ahead to next year, my sources have told me DeBonsa is going to be there. So it's like,
is he going there? That's what you're hearing?
Yeah,
for sure.
He's going to BYU. DeBonsa's
going to BYU.
That's I mean, look, sources always say things. You never know. I'm not confirming anything. I'm just saying, from what I hear, that's where he's going to end up going. So you could have a situation, wow, KOC, where let's go Dimon top three. Next year, DeBonsa's number one. So now Kevin Young's first year at BYU, he's got a top three pick. Second year, he's got the number one pick. Pretty good start to his tenure at BYU. And they got a lot of talent that's going through there. So Utah basketball sleeper cell at this point, and they got a lot of talent. And Dimon is fun to watch. I feel like he's going to be a wing in the NBA, but it is nice that he has these point guard skills that he's developing at, you know, at the college level. So you're very versatile kid, and he's one of the guys I feel like that could be in the it's like Ace, Bailey, Flag, Dimon, right? Those top three are all in the conversation for number one.
I think you're right about that, Tate. He's probably not a traditional lead point guard because he doesn't necessarily have the speed or the burst or that, you know, one-on-one handle. Almost all of his creation so far for BYU has been in pick and roll. He hasn't isolated much, hasn't shown that one-on-one ability. He doesn't seem to have that quickness, but that's what NBA teams run on offense nowadays. It's not a lot of teams that have one guy who runs traditional point guard. It's a bunch of guys handling the ball and handling creation responsibilities. There's more teams like that than there are with these lead, like 100 touches a game types of guards. So I think that bodes positively for Demon when you're looking forward for him in the NBA, as long as the scoring continues against these tougher opponents, especially with a three-point shooting who is near 30% from three the last 2 years with Real Madrid, near 70% from the free throw line. So the touch is a question, but he's shooting the hell out of it so far this year. It does not look like a question if you've only watched him with BYU, but we'll see how that sustains for him over the course of the season.
Do you have a fit for him? Like, if you were to, like, if there was a matchmaking situation where you're like, this team could get Yegor Dimon and that would be the perfect fit for him. I mean, is it like the Nets? Is it like the Wizards? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what team needs his services? You know what I mean? And could he be kind of a franchise guy? I don't feel like he's a franchise guy, but I feel like if he's your second, third guy, you know, he could develop into that. But I know, KOC?
I mean, I think for a lot of the teams, the answer is Philly first, considering the amount of talent that they already have within the organization. Granted, they stink so far this year, so the talent does
Jared
not look
McCain
great.
Is averaging the most points as a rookie since MJ. So Jared McCain, shout out to him. He is fun to watch.
I mean, he's been a lot of fun to watch. I'd say maybe a cleaner slate like Toronto, where there's a lot of different pieces there and you can just add another talent. Toronto would be interesting for him. I don't like the Detroit fit. I don't like the Charlotte fit. You already got LaMelo there. No. You got Brandon Miller. Chicago's got some ball handlers already. How about Brooklyn? replace Ben Simmons.
I think Brooklyn's perfect. Yeah, that'd be great.
I think Brooklyn's the team. The best Yegor Demon fit is Brooklyn. Let's go with that.
Sign me up. Yeah, I like that. Final answer, Brooklyn Nets.
We're going to take another quick break, and then we're going to talk about some UConn prospects. All right, Tate, we're seeing UConn rookies shine so far in the NBA. Donovan Clingan over in Portland, near league in block percentage. Stephon Castle really coming along with the San Antonio Spurs. Chased around your guy, Stephen Curry, last weekend. Unbelievable performance by him, developing a two-man chemistry with Victor Wembanyama. Cam Spencer just made his debut with the Memphis Grizzlies. Tristan Newton hasn't really played much for the Pacers, but Clingan and Castle shining. And then there are some UConn prospects in this upcoming draft class as well. Liam McNeely, a potential lottery pick. Tell me about him.
Yeah, Liam McNeely originally was supposed to go play at Indiana, was supposed to be the shooter that Mike Woodson has been trying to find elusively for so long. He got Luke Goody in the transfer portal, but McNeely decides to opt out, goes to UConn to play for Dan Hurley, and now starting for Dan Hurley. And like you said, I mean, he's got the headband on. He's a sharpshooter. He looks like he's Jimmy Chitwood's long-lost cousin. You know, these are all the things that if you were trying to identify a guy who checks the Hoosiers boxes, Liam McNeely is one of those guys. But he's got game. I do think that he's going to develop under Hurley. He's running, obviously, a high-level offensive system, a lot of stacked actions that Hurley likes to run there. So you know he's going to be prepared when he gets to the next level. And the mentality, the discipline, the intensity, all these intangible things that all these front offices, you know, they want, Liam McNeely is going to get that instilled in him by playing with Hurley. So very encouraging stuff. I'll be interested to see if he is a one-and-done or if he's a guy like Alex Caravan that kind of tests the waters but then decides eventually to go back. But he's a wing that's got game and can shoot the basketball. And I know that they like to call him 3 and D's KOC. So that's good news for his future finances.
I mean, you mentioned for him how he fits into that Hurley system. He had a play recently where he set an on-ball screen, rolled to the rim. There was nothing there because the defense switched. And then an off-ball screen was set for him out of that action, receives the ball off the screen, drives hard to the rim, finishes. And I'm just watching the play and I'm like, how is this dude a freshman? Like the IQ, the ability to do so many different things on the floor, the time and time again, it feels like that's what's on my mind. How is he a freshman? That's partially a symptom of playing in Hurley's offense, which just it recruits smart players who can play in that system. But McNeely just looks ahead of his teenage years right now, I'd say.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say the cool thing about McNeely is that a lot of times I see all these like clipped out plays, right? I mean, we live in the social media world. You see clipped out plays and they're like, look at this action that was ran and da 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 da. And then, you know, I talked to Hurley and his staff kind of about that. And they're like, a lot of this stuff is feel, right? I mean, they have, you know, because they have been taught, like, if this isn't open, this is going to be open. It's not like necessarily a set play call. So the fact that McNeely has the ability to conceptualize what it is and to adjust in real time, to have that feel, that's encouraging for a freshman. So it's not even like he can run these plays that are being called. It's the fact that he can react and anticipate and make smart decisions. I mean, that's even more encouraging for a freshman.
I mean, with McNeely, he's 6'7", 210, averaging 14 points, almost shooting 40% from three on the year. Had a hard time finishing against the Memphis length of that epic overtime game UConn had against Memphis on Monday night. But with him, I think the feel, I was looking, doing some background research on McNeely. Bryce Simon over at Sports Illustrated a few years ago wrote a story about McNeely when he was a high school prospect. McNeely's great-grandfather, grandfather, mother, and two of his uncles all played D1 college basketball. So basketball is part of his family. It is in his blood for sure. And I think that shows with UConn so far in the early part of the year. And I think you're right, though, Tate. The Alex Caravan example for him is something to think about because Caravan's the only one of the five starters that went back to school for another year. Caravan on the season averaging 16 points a game, 50% from two. Shoot 50% nearly from three right now, and he's playmaking more, four assists per game to 1.3 turnovers. And I watched a bunch of his assists on Synergy before doing this podcast with you today. It's all within the flow of the offense, that UConn system. It's these little passes where he receives the ball at the elbow, quick pass to a cutter inside, quick kick out opportunity. It's all NBA style passing as a connective piece. And that's something Caravan wasn't asked to do nearly as much last year, as more of that knockdown corner guy. Now he's in positions where he can show off his feel. Is that one of the differences you've observed from Caravan this season?
Absolutely. It kind of reminds me of Kyle Anderson, aka Slow Mo, where, you know, he can do some of that, kind of point guard stuff as well. If you need him to, he can carry that load. I'm not saying Caravan's going to be bringing the ball up the floor. He doesn't have the ball handling to really do that, but he can if you need him to on one or two possessions. He also, like you said, makes the right pass, makes the right play, moves the basketball, has a good sense of where people are going to end up being in a lot of those stacked actions. So he's a really solid player. I think his leadership has gone up a peg, and he's a better shooter this year than he was last year. I mean, it's automatic. I mean, when he takes a shot, you expect it to go in. So, I mean, as far as value, having a specialist like that who can come in, make shots, take over some of the ball handling if you need him to, find guys, get him easy shots. I mean, he has a lot of plus, attributes that I think a lot of people will like. And, you know, going back this year just shows that he can do it at a higher volume if you need him to.
Yeah, I mean, he's taken over 400 three-pointers in his 3 years at UConn. He's made nearly 40% of them, and he's made 85% of his free throws. So you know, Caravan, what you're going to get from him out of a shooter. As a shooter, he goes back, and he's showing, hey, I can do a bit as a connective playmaker, too. The Kyle Anderson comp's a good one. That's a very interesting
shades
one.
I
like that one, Tate. I'm gonna steal that Anderson. Kyle Anderson with a better jumper. Kyle Anderson crossed with somebody. We'll figure that out over the course of time.
You do your blending. Yeah. You do all your science behind the scenes. I'm just telling you, I see some shades. I see a couple shades of Kyle Anderson.
Is UConn gonna three-peat, Tate?
Oh, that's a good question. They have the depth of three-peat, and I think that's really the thing that is fascinating. Jaden Ross coming off the bench for them. Jalen Stewart coming off the bench for them. They're really good players. Terrace Reed coming off the bench for them. So they have the depth where they could actually make a run. Last year, they won games by an average of 23 points per game, most all time in the NCAA tournament. So until I see someone actually give them a game in March, I'm going to defer to it's possible, because Dan Hurley is that good and this team will be that good, and they have the right players and the right mix of guys to be able to do it. I don't necessarily think it's going to happen this year, but I didn't think they were going to repeat, to be quite frank. I just thought with the way the tournament plays out, something weird would happen. They'd get some weird matchup. Someone would throw a funky junk defense at them that would give them trouble, that makes it a game, and the ball bounces the wrong way. And yeah, you know what I mean? That usually is what happens to these great teams. But UConn and Dan Hurley have been able to be defiant, and they've been able to avoid those trap games or whatever you want to call them. So it's possible. I'm going to lean towards no, but it's very much, it's not like UConn is going to be the only outside looking in. They're going to be in the Sweet 16 and they're going to have a chance. And if you give UConn a chance, if they go to the Final Four, they win. They don't just go to the Final Four and they're done. They're not Michigan State. They actually go get the deed done. So watch out for them.
Watch out for sure.
No offense to the Midwest and Michigan State. That was not it's still good to go to the Final Four. I'm just saying sometimes, you know, you go to the Final Four, pat yourself on the back. Some teams go there to win, and that's what Dan Hurley tries to do.
How are you feeling about your Charlotte Hornets, Tate?
Great question, Kevin. Look, LaMelo, I appreciate the 50-point performance. That's great to see. I'm a big Brandon Miller fan. I think he is our franchise guy. I don't want to say this because this is probably like sacrilegious, because I should enjoy the experience, but with LaMelo playing so good right now, maybe we just, you know, make some calls. See what some people, see if there's any interest out there. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
And maybe the timeline doesn't work with Charles Lee with LaMelo, but maybe using LaMelo as a way to create a timeline with assets that actually could assist Charles Lee to be the best version of himself, that would be smart. And I will say, the benching the other night that everyone had such a hoopla about, I was actually encouraged by that, because that showed me that Charles Lee is like, this is how we do things. We actually have a culture here. We're going to ride the hot hand. And, you know, I understand there's a franchise player and yada, 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 but I like where they're trending. I like where the Hornets are going. I feel like they have an actual direction, KOC. And shout out to you. You told me Charles Lee would have a plan. So I appreciate that. It looks like they have a plan for once.
Interesting. Trade LaMelo. Huh. I mean, a lot of people would not be thinking that this year when he's averaging 30 points per game and he's...
I'm a sell high guy. He's only
23 years old. Your point is that he's a very fun, exciting player, but he's not that winner. He's not a guy who leads you to a championship. That's what you're thinking, right?
I'm just thinking that for the Brandon Miller of it all in our Brandon Miller timeline, like Brandon Miller at 28 is what I'm thinking about. And I'm like, what does this team look like around Brandon Miller at 28? And that means we need assets, and we need assets now. And what is the thing that we have that everybody actually may want? It's LaMelo Ball dropping 50 points. You know what I mean? I don't know what team needs that LaMelo Ball figure, but you know, why not see who has some interest out there, KOC? That's all I'm saying. Just gauge some interest.
Trade LaMelo Ball, start Trey Mann, draft Yegor Demon.
There you go. That sounds fun. That sounds fun. I'm down for that. Yeah, sign me up. I mean, look, Brandon Miller is the franchise. You told me this. You were correct. You were on the right side of history. So Brandon Miller, he has my heart. He has my I have all eyes on Brandon Miller at 27, 28. That's all I'm saying. So I know Hornets fans will be upset. They're like, why would you want to trade LaMelo? I don't want to trade LaMelo. I just want to see how much interest he can gauge around the league, and then we see where we are. You know what I mean?
Just,
that's all.
You just want to know what's out there. If someone's going to offer you six first round draft picks, you think about it.
Who's
right?
in win now mode and who needs a point guard? You know what I mean? Yeah. That's all I'm saying. Originally, I wanted Steph Curry, but
the Lakers, maybe trade LaMelo to the Lakers, get some of their high value future first round picks. God. I don't know. Just thinking.
Oh man, Bronny for LaMelo, Bronny and assets. Because we want Bronny. I'm trying to sell tickets still, so we need Bronny. That's what I'm making the call
play
for.
Play Bronny for 20 minutes a night, the ultimate job.
Bronny, Brandon Miller, who's stopping that backcourt? Come on.
Bronny's stopping it.
Someone is stopping it.
All right, Tate, thank you so much for joining me today, man. Where can we find your stuff?
Of course, I appreciate it, KOC. Anytime, I'm always around. I do One Shining Podcast twice a week. We talk about basketball at large. We got EuroLeague games on FanDuel TV. And speaking of FanDuel TV, I'm on FanDuel TV once a week through the Ringer myself, Cousin Sal, and a rotating cast of Ringer employees, your former friends. And I mean, not friends, but former employees and friends and whatever you want to call them. You know
There's
what I mean?
Friends.
You know what I mean? We're all friends. So shout out to you, KOC, for having me on the show, man. And I'm around anytime you need me.
Thank you, Tate. Hope you have a great rest of your day. Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Kevin O'Connell Show. Please subscribe if you haven't done so ever already. Thank you, Stone, for producing. Hope you have a great rest of your day.